And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 680. We're here to recap your week 18 fab, talk about some barrel leaderboards, you know, risers and fallers over the last month that might be of interest to us, one would say, and much, much more, as we'll probably go down some rabbit holes like I tend to do when I'm on a show. So we'll have some fun there. But first off, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, and my guest and kind of Monday co-host, as usual, on the show. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Ted, how are we doing, my friend?
Bubba, doing very well, thanks. It's good to be back for another week. We were talking about I was away for the weekend, so this show will be helping me as much as the listeners, I'm sure. But hopefully I followed enough so I can help out today.
Well, I know you'll bring plenty to the table. I'm not too worried about that one for sure. Before we go there, as usual, I'll let you plug away your Sports Ethos work. I don't know, maybe you took the week off because you're on break, but what do you got going on at Sports Ethos?
Yeah, well, I did the article on Monday, and I figured I was okay because the All-Star break was worked out nicely with my weekend vacation. So I was no stats were going to happen while I was writing it early. But yeah, I do my weekly NFBC main event focus streamer, starting pitcher streamer article. I choose four pitchers each week, and two based on matchups, two based on how they've been pitching overall, and grade myself after a few weeks for each of them and have a little game going. But yeah, that's out every Sunday. Sometimes usually in the morning at Sports Ethos, and that's pretty much it right now.
Yep. That's awesome. It's good stuff as always, and it pertains into the fab conversation that we always take part in as well. So always fun stuff there, but as everybody knows, it's our Monday show, so we'll recap the week in fab that was, which was a pretty fun week, all things considered. But first, let's get into it. Just another fun topic here. For those that, if you guys want to check it out, I looked at FanGraphs. They have StatCast on there, of course. And for the caveman like myself, it's easier to navigate that than the actual Baseball Savant page, which is cool. It has a lot of nice metrics, but you could set the dates a lot easier on FanGraphs. So I set it back. We're recording on the 22nd. So I picked June 21st because it's about 30 days of action, even though there was the All-Star break. I know that's going to be thrown in there, but it gives us 30 days roughly. So we'll talk about some interesting names that have the most barrels over the last month, and then we'll flip it over and some interesting names that haven't barreled much at all in the past month. They have to be qualified hitters, so it can't just be some guy that had three at-bats with zero barrels. And it's mainly going to be names that might be relevant to drop or to hang on to, or if you're in a trading league, maybe go trade for, vice versa. So we'll start at the top, and this one's more of a just, hey, look what's going on situation. And that's Austin Riley. That over the last 30 days, Ben, Riley has 17 barrels. He's the only player with 17 barrels in baseball, aka leading in barrel rate, in barrels, I should say, over the last 30 days, near 60% hard hit rate. And I bring this up because this is a guy that people are getting so frustrated with at one point. So we don't have to go deep into it unless you have some interesting nuggets. But just the fact that Austin Riley, he's back, is kind of what I wanted to point out. And those that were patient with him, which you should have been, you're going to get rewarded, it feels like, pretty soon.
For sure. He's kind of been back for 2 months now because you look at his June. He had a 909 OPS, six home runs, 17 runs, 13 RBI. And he's followed that up with a 980 OPS in July, so improving upon what he already did the previous month. And if you look at the season-long stats, they're going to be suppressed because they're just so bad in April and May, as Riley managers know. And I do have him on one of my – he's actually on my home keeper league, which is a reason why I think I'm about to sell off this week. But it's all right. And – I mean, you're not going to get the full, I think, the full return on his draft cost, Riley. But if you've been able to manage having one of your early round picks not really return that value, then he could help you potentially win your league or cash if you're still in the race.
Yep, most definitely. And he's going to, I think he'll be one of those because we're 10 weeks left, basically 9 or 10 weeks, give or take, depends on how you look at the math on the rest of the season. And there's still plenty of time to make moves. That's the thing, like in your standings, I should say. Eventually, that gets smaller and smaller, obviously. Common sense dictates that. But 10 weeks is still a lot of time, 2.5 months to make things happen, especially if you have a talent like Austin Riley who can, you know, one would be shocked if he hits 2 to 3 home runs of some weeks, like pretty regularly, the way he can get going. It's going to be hot in Atlanta, so on and so forth. So, yeah, he could be a game changer for you. Obviously, you hoped he would have provided earlier support to get you to where you needed to be. But like you said, it's one of those like, hey, you stuck with him. Now, hopefully he helps you get to the finish line, or at least somewhere in the green to get to the finish line of that result. So that's pretty good with Austin Riley. And again, we're not going to go over everybody. Like, we're not going to go over Juan Soto, who had two more home runs on Monday. So he might be leading this leaderboard if we updated it tomorrow. That's just how Juan Soto operates. But I want to hit on George Springer. He's third on the list, 14 barrels over the past month of action, Ben. And this is another guy that people were giving up on. I was really close to dropping if people paid attention to my Bubba and the Bloom show. Ryan and I talked about that a lot because Ryan was pro George Springer. I was getting extremely frustrated with George Springer. But the 14 barrels over the last month, he has 8 home runs. So, you know, pretty close to what you'd expect, like maybe a little lucky compared to home run to barrel rate that you expect, but that's usually around 54%. So he's pretty close, 8 out of 14 in that regard. But Springer's hitting .319, 25 RBIs over that month stretch, and he's leading off for the Jays as well of late. So pretty good production here, and another guy that if you stuck with him, he could help you quite a bit.
For sure. He's someone that I think I have him on a DC, and I would bench him every time he would go off. So I finally stopped benching him. Yep. Yeah, because it was getting to that point, like you were saying, where you're at least in a DC where you can't drop him. You're just going to sit him for someone else on your bench who's like an okay player with playing time. But he's been in my lineup pretty consistently now, and I know he had a good week last week or good couple weeks in a row. So he's really coming around, it seems like. But overall, just still rough numbers on the year. He has a 7.11 OPS, 2.31 average. That's really hurting. The runs are okay, 47. It's when you're betting leadoff, you kind of want a little bit more, I think. And going to be interesting to see what the Blue Jays do with the trade deadline, see how that affects Springer. But the one thing, though, that I noticed is looking at his stats across various sites right now, his BABIP was 250 on the season, and then his average exit velocity is 87.7, which is 25th percentile, so that's not good. Even though his XBA on the year is 270. So it seems like he's been unlucky, but he's just not hitting the ball that hard, Springer. And the barrel rate's up above league average on the season now, which I'm pretty sure it probably wasn't over the first 3 months. So I guess this hot July has really brought those numbers up for the season-long stats. I mean, the sprint speed's still there, 77th percentile. And the Savant rolling ex-WOBA chart that they have for every player over last 100 plate appearances, he's a currently at 439 ex-WOBA over the last 100 plate appearances. So he's really on fire right now. I don't know if he'll be one of the ones traded by the Blue Jays because I don't know what his contract status is. But if he did get a move somewhere, maybe it does help his value over the last 2.5 months that we got left. But, he's definitely – I could see him getting dropped in the 12s. Like you said, you play more 12s, so you're getting close to cutting him. But it's good that you held on and – I think I saw him available in 115 throughout the season, but yeah, for now I think the drop concerns are kind of out the window for now.
Yep, double donged on Sunday. That obviously helps these numbers out quite a bit. He's a free agent in 2027, so he feels like he could be one of the ones held on to, but there are still quite a few Jays that are offered. And Stephen Crawford, a fellow Canadian in the chat here, he mentioned Springer looked lost the first 3 months. That's a nice way of putting it. Yes, that's a lot nicer than I used terms on other shows. And he also mentions, yeah, he's got 2 or 3 years with the Jays. So he's probably not going anywhere just yet unless it's a massive haul that comes back. And the Jays might be interested in that if possible because they are like it feels like any minute now you're going to see the full rebooks. That's the other fun thing I didn't really say at the top of the show. We have like 8 or 9 days left before the trade deadline. So, and there's a lot of moving and shaking that's supposed to take place in the next, handful of days. So another fun one to look at there. We'll skip over Aaron Judge. I think we know he hits the ball very hard. Britton Doyle, 5th on the list. And Britton Doyle's name's been mentioned a lot more on shows. We've talked about him here through Fab and whatnot. But over the last month, Doyle's 5th on the list, 14 barrels, a 20% barrel rate over the last month. And over those games since June 21st, Doyle's hitting .311. 10 home runs, though, in those 14 barrels. So we know how that kind of fluctuates the system a little bit. But as a whole, he has taken advantage of things because, the batting average was kind of a concern for Doyle. Power speed was not. And he's producing quite well this past month. But I know I'll give you the floor. There are some things that might be worth stepping back a second for.
Well, yeah, I completely whiffed on Doyle because he just struck out so many times last year. He had 399 at-bats in 2023, struck out 151 times, and without doing the actual math with 22 walks, I'm pretty sure that's over 33% of the time he struck out. So even as a – where he was going in drafts, post-pick 300, maybe even 400, and even with the Colorado bump for BABIP and things like that, I still – I had Doyle on my list, like as late flyers, but I never pushed him up high enough where I got him anywhere. And I think a lot of this production has actually come pretty recently. Like he's, I think I heard Jeff and Scott say on the RotoWire pod that he's in the top 15 or close to it on the season, which is kind of mind blowing. He'll probably, if he keeps it up, he'll probably be Ryan's pick as the guy going out the first 15 rounds that finishes the first round value. And I would not have put my money on Doyle. I definitely did not pick him as the candidate for that, because he's already at 20-20 almost. He has 16 homers, 20 steals, the almost 280 average. Let's look at the K rate. So the K rate's still kind of high, 25% on the year. Last year, I undersold it. It was 35% last year, so even worse than I thought. The BABIP's 340, so the cores is affected. It's kind of helping that out a little bit. He's fast, though, so I'm surprised it's not higher, considering how well he's hitting. But I guess with that K rate and the cores bump, it's not an awful K rate to hit what he's hitting, but I think he'll be okay going forward. And the power, I feel like, came out of nowhere. But on the season, his barrel rate's 11%, which is 76th percentile, so that's pretty good. It's fairly high there. And the average exit velocity isn't that high for Doyle, 89 miles per hour on average, 49th percentile. So kind of middle of the pack with his exit velocity. So I guess when he does hit it hard, he's getting that optimal launch angle, which I don't know how sustainable that is, but if he can do it, he can do it. And the sprint speed's off the charts. So he's definitely one of those, not necessarily a league winner, but one of those guys that if you drafted Doyle, he definitely puts you in a good position to win your league this year.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's funny because he's got some massive home road splits in like the batting average department and whatnot. Actually has more home runs on the road than at home. So it's just a weird dynamic. And essentially, Britton Doyle's doing what everyone wanted Nolan Jones to do this year. And Britton Doyle's doing it. So see where that goes. But his defense will definitely keep him on the diamond.
It's really only been the average. It's only really been the average at home from a fantasy standpoint. I mean, on the road. So he's in 217 on the road and 345 at home. So in real life, he's been really bad on the road. But he still has 8 homers and 9 steals on the road, which is good. So I wouldn't sit Doyle necessarily on it for his away games.
Yep, he's plugged into my lineup pretty much with a regular basis. So I don't see that changing anytime soon. All right, we'll skip over Lindor, Santander, who's been a beast. And I want to hit on Vladito. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is 8th on the list over the last month with 13 barrels. And what's more impressive, Ben, he has 9 home runs over those 13 barrels. So who knows, the drill there. 333 average, 18 runs, 29 RBIs over the past month. And more interesting, ground ball rate of 46.5%, which is a lot still, all things considered. But for Vlad, it's down a little bit. So what do we think with Guerrero, who with the 9 home runs and 13 barrels, that's pretty lucky, but overall been crushing the baseball.
Yeah, his stat cast is all dark red again. So, I mean, he's doing what he's always done before. And so one thing I wanted to look at with Vlad was his actual per expected homers, which StatCast provides. So on the year, he has 17.1 expected home runs and 16 actual home runs. So he's actually been a little unlucky per his batted ball data. And like the year-to-date barrel rate is 12.7%, 87th percentile. The hard hit is 90th percentile. His XBA is 302, which is he's kind of hitting like Yordan and Judge. Like he's with those guys in terms of his batted ball quality. So I don't know. Do you know what the total barrels are? But I feel like 16 homers is kind of low for someone who's has these metrics on Savant. And I don't know. Like as you said, with the ground ball rate, just he's got to get it in the air more. And I mean, until he has
40 total barrels.
Yeah, so he's less than half, which per Ryan's work, a little unlucky. But so maybe like he should have 21, 22, something in that range. So he's down about 6 if you go off that estimation. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in drafts next year with Vlad, because I'm sure the projections will like him again, especially something like the BatX where it uses Savant data. And I don't know exactly if Vlad's returning his ADP right now, but he's definitely not hurting you like someone like Bichette is or maybe even – I forget who else is going in that range, but guys like that. And – I mean, he has been valuable if you do have Vlad because of the corner infield drought that we kind of have in baseball this year. But it'd be cool to see where he ends with the homers, because it feels like he's more like a 30-homer guy. He's been around there the last 2 years, 32 and 26. But the average is nice. It's good to see him hit close to 300 again.
Yeah, like I said, over the last month, 333, the ground ball rate's down to 46.5%, which on the season still close to 51%. So it's one thing I think a lot of people that even, you know, downplay Vlad, like I'll admit I've never been the biggest Vlad fantasy fan because he assists the ball into the ground. But it's one of those, just a 5% change in ground ball rate. Now he's got 9 homers and 13 barrels. That's how hard he hits the baseball. So is that sustainable for a full season? Who knows? But it's like, you know, the whole things even out throughout a full season. Got super unlucky with the home runs early in the year with all the barrels. Now he's kind of getting those barrels turned into home runs. Like you said, let's see where it finishes. That'd be real interesting. What if he, you know, gets close to 25-ish home runs by the time things are all said and done? Then it's not a complete waste of a season. The batting average, like you said, has been clutch, especially in a world where batting average is so low. He's been outstanding in that regard this season and going to make for another yearly tradition. Where do you take Vlad in drafts come this offseason? Because if he still only gets like the 20-ish home runs, it's like, do we justify it? Because that's going to be a fun conversation for a later date and time. Jaron Duran, this is a guy that's been talked about quite a bit because it was a draft season spike, produced okay, struggled a bit, and boy, is he back in a big way. Duran has 13 barrels over the past month of baseball, and in that month, Duran's hitting .327. He has 6 home runs on those 13 barrels to go with 3 stolen bases, so he has become a primetime player for fantasy and the Red Sox. Any thoughts on Jaron Duran?
I wish I got him on more teams because I was big on Duran in draft season, and a lot of other people ended up seeing the same things that I think I was seeing, and his ADP moved up along with that. But it's good to see the power because I didn't really hope to have too many homers for Duran. I thought the runs, the steals, and the average would be enough based on where he was getting drafted. But looking at his Statcast on the year, there's a lot of reds for Duran, so it's not really a fluky thing that he's got 12 homers right now. I was in my mind, I was hoping for 15 on the year, like 15-40, and I would have been satisfied. He actually may not get the steals. He's only at 22, but if he can go like 20-30, that's plenty good, especially with a .290 average and probably well over 100 runs. He has 67 right now, like a third of the year to go. So things are looking good for that, for him to hit those numbers. And I don't have the breakdown right now, but he had a really, really hot June, Duran, over 1,000 OPS. And still really good in the 15 July games he's played so far, .898. And the one thing that's really been good too is the average over 300 in both months. So I don't know if the power is going to stick, especially playing in Fenway, because it's really hard unless he pulls the ball to hit a homer there. But I mean, I don't know. On the road, he see the splits on home and road. So yeah, he has 4 homers at home, 8 on the road. So that's not really too surprising. He's really got to pull the ball around the pesky pole to get one out in Fenway. But no issues with Duran. If he can hit 20, I think that's a win. If he ends at like 18, I wouldn't complain.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wasn't expecting a ton of power from him. I was thinking maybe 15. That'd be cool. But steal a ton of bases, hit for average, score a ton of runs, and doing a little bit of all of that right now, which is great to see from Jaron Duran. And heads into Colorado to start the week, so that shouldn't suck either, which would be pretty good stuff as well. Now we're going to get to some fun names. Speaking of Colorado, Michael Toglia has been a conundrum when it comes to fantasy discussion of late. Over the past month, when you look at Michael Toglia, as I need to get back to my main page here, he sits at, I just got rid of it. He has 13 barrels over the past month of action, but it's a tough, like, give or take. It's all power, nothing average related when it comes to Toglia, because over the past month, Michael Toglia is hitting a whopping .209, but he's got 10 home runs been out of those 13 barrels. I think some might say unsustainable, but what's your thoughts on Toglia, who, you know, he keeps getting these good matchups and he's been hitting tons of home runs if you need them.
For sure. I feel like he's someone that could, if you chase after Toglia and Fab, I think he's already gone because of the series last week, and he had the weekend series this past weekend in Coors. And he's kind of been, I remember we talked about him a week or two ago as maybe a Fab ad, even in OC. So he's probably not available to any spots, but so I have his splits pulled up. And one thing that is interesting is, so the average is the same versus lefties and righties, but he's a switch hitter, which I did not know until just now, but his OPS versus left-handed pitchers is .904, and it's under 700 versus righty. So kind of, it's the bad split that people like Ozzie Albies has dealt with in the past. And I think he hasn't really struggled with, but Albies kind of volumes his way to still being really good, even though he's better versus lefties. Toglia, I don't know if he has that same luxury. He only has 183 at-bats in the year, so maybe like 200 plate appearances. So he's not really been a full-time player. And he also has more homers versus lefties. So he has half the at-bats, but two more home runs, nine versus lefties, seven versus righties on the season. And the average for me is just too low. It's I think I called him like Adam Dunnish or Joey Gallo. But not as good as either one of those guys, I think, in their prime. And if you look at he's not even qualified on Baseball Savant, so he hasn't really played that much to that point. I mean, he's only 25 and he plays in Colorado, but I think the strikeout rate is just too much where he's going to really benefit from the BABIP boost that Coors provides. His XBA is only 238 on the year, but the barrel rate's through the charts on the season, 17.5%, which is really ridiculous. It's got to be, he'd probably be like 98th, 99th percentile if he qualified. So he's pretty much an all or nothing hitter and not even, and so I don't know. He'll probably go on a massive cold streak now. If he already hasn't started doing that, his April is what dragged his average down so much. It was 093. He's been above 200 in the other 2 months. He missed all of May. So, I mean, maybe if you take out April, maybe he just got off to a bad start. Maybe he hits like 200, 220, 215 the rest of the year. So that may have value, but just be careful if your team's weak in average.
Yeah, he's a guy that I don't lock into my lineups. I've had him for a while on my team, so I've enjoyed the power. But it's also kind of dependent. I've mentioned it on these Fab recaps a lot that I'm targeting certain teams' weaknesses. Like I have teams where my hitting's horrific because home runs, RBIs. I just basically say, okay, I don't care about average right now. Improve me in three categories, which Toglia can do when he's running well. Like you said, he's also literally a coin flip away or a snap of the fingers away from going full Thanos and disappearing from the menu here pretty quickly. So just be careful is what Ben's saying, and I agree with, is it's fun. If certain teams, he's going to fit very well. Other teams might be more of a hindrance than a good thing when it comes to Michael Toglia. And I know for a fact, I said a lot of my lineups before the show started. I don't have them starting in all of my lineups, and he's in Coors Field to start the week. He's got Houck, he's got Pivetta in two out of three starts, and I have like, you know, some other options at first base of the outfield. So he's not an autoplay for me even in Coors, which probably sounds very, you know, contradicting to the comments made, but it's all team dependent to this time of the year. Is you know, get the best you can do and go from there. Paul Goldschmidt. This one surprised me to see him up here because I have had my fair share of words for Paul Goldschmidt this year. But right now, over the last month, 14th on the barrel list with 12 barrels. Paul Goldschmidt has 5 home runs on the 12 barrels, so it's a little unlucky. With 13 runs scored, 9 RBIs, and Ben, Paul Goldschmidt is hitting 208 on the month. There's a point where barrels don't matter anymore to me, Ben. So what's your thoughts on Paul Goldschmidt? Because the fact he's actually barreling the ball now, he wasn't doing that before, so that's an improvement. But the rest of the production still not really following suit right now.
No, it's not. And on the year, he now has 14 homers. So maybe it's like a 22, if he gets lucky, 25 homer pace. And that's fine, I think, for where he was being drafted because he had 25 last year. But you were hoping for high runs, high RBI, and an average that wouldn't hurt you. But the average is really hurting you right now because it's 225 on the year. His XBA is 252, so he's definitely been unlucky. But 252 is still a little disappointing for where Goldschmidt was getting picked. And so that's kind of like what you would expect. I was thinking of this as you're saying his name. Was your bet with Ryan. I forget who picked Goldschmidt, who picked Christian Walker.
I have Christian Walker.
All right, you see it, my man. Yeah, yeah, so I think you're going to win that one still, but
Ryan has conceded that one pretty much.
Did he? Already. Is that one of the ones he conceded? Okay.
Yeah, right, yeah. Conceded.
Yeah, I remember listening to you guys reviewing your bets, so it's good that he conceded for you at least. Yep. And yeah, so Goldschmidt, he's definitely at the end of the road, I think. One thing that's always interesting with Goldschmidt is the bat speed, because we're trying to figure out how that can help us determine if someone's aging or if they're hurt. He's above average with his bat speed on the season, 62nd percentile. So not terrible, but also like we've been saying across many, not you and me, but other people with podcasts, is how's it compared year over year for people who are aging, things like that. So who knows if Goldschmidt was like 80th percentile last year, or so it's hard to tell. But compared to the league, he's doing all right there. And I think I say that because I remember hearing people say that he was struggling versus fastballs, which is kind of a sign of decline. I'm not sure what his numbers are right now, but I don't want to waste time looking for that. And also, I brought up the splits versus right-handed versus lefty with Toglia, and Goldschmidt's doing the same thing. He's got a 758 OPS versus lefties, 626 versus righties on the season. So he's in the majority of his plate appearances, he's struggling. And I don't know. It could just be a hot streak. I would have to see more to see if he's – or to say for certain that he is back. And you go by month to month, so all of his OPSs by month are below 700. Even with the spike in barrel rate we've seen over the last month or so. So I don't think Goldschmidt's back. I think he's on the way out. And if your trading deadline hasn't passed yet, if you can make trades, maybe try to cash in on the hot streak and see if someone thinks he may be back.
Yep, I think that's the best approach to do is cash in while you can, because it's getting pretty rough with Goldie and Arenado there in St. Louis. Other guys are hitting pretty well. Not the old guys, that's for sure. Next, the last one of the kind of leaders we're going to discuss here, and I have to get this name in there. It's the 16th guy on the list. That's Randy Arozarena. 12 barrels over the past 30 days with a 50% hard hit rate. If you go back to June 21st, Randy is hitting .291 with 5 home runs on those 12 barrels, 4 stolen bases. It was a horrific start to the season when it came in terms of batting average. He was still on like a 20-20 pace, 25-25 pace, which is crazy. But the average wasn't there. Now he's hitting .291 over this past month. I think someone said since like July 1st, he's hitting like .350 or something, which is even better. What's your thoughts on Randy? Because he could also be traded by the time the show comes out, for all we know. But he's definitely showing signs of life, which makes a lot of my teams very happy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He's always been your guy. I know that. And I have Randy on one team, so it's good. I'm happy that he's also turning it around. I don't think he really killed the Yankees too much this past weekend, so that's good too. But yeah, so now he sits at .212 on the year with his average, which is much better than the .160 it was at. It felt like forever. And not so if you look at the actual months, I know you gave her the last 30 days, but in June he hit .291 and so far in July .293. So that's really going to bring it back up. And it's kind of crazy when he's hit that well over the last month and a half and he's still at .212. But he really had to hold a dig out of. So the thing with Randy is, and also why I never really drafted him all that much in the past, was because the expected stats weren't always pretty. His XBA on the year right now is .234. It was .243 last year, .234 the year before, and that's when he had much better results. So now I think he's at the other end of the variance where he's still kind of skill-wise the same player, but now he's just having a bad year where it's extreme in the other direction. Because his X-Slug is .422, it was .435 last year, and his .422 is the second highest over the last four seasons. So he's a weird one to project out, especially when you use projections like I try to do. And he's one of the guys where, or even like the underlying numbers like I'm looking at right here on Savant, but the projections kind of say, okay, well, he can do it despite the numbers looking like this. And like you said, he's on the 25-25 pace roughly, and he's athletic enough to do that. So he's 29 now, but maybe he has a Javi Baez type crash where he's not really as old as we expect him to decline. I mean, that's not really relevant to this year, but I think he'll maybe finish closer to .240 for his season long average, which is really the issue with Randy right now. But I still expect this power and the speed to be there the last couple of months.
Yep. I'm with you on that. I think we're gonna have a good finish to the year. I'm curious to where he lands, 'cause I don't think he's going to finish the year in Tampa Bay. If he goes to Seattle, does that make me feel great? I don't know. Probably not. But they are actually in need of an outfielder right now because J-Rod is not on the IL right now, but he's not in the lineup on Monday either. He's dealing with a sprained ankle, so we'll have to see how that plays out. And we've seen that the Mariners are making moves, and they should with that starting rotation, so Randy would be a great fit there if all is said and done. All right, let's flip this over to the guys that have struggled to barrel the baseball over the past month. And this kind of could even be part of are you dropping these guys? Are you moving on from these guys? What are you doing with these guys? Because they were rather popular names at draft day or were popular sometime throughout the season. So let's start with Ke'Bryan Hayes. He is, out of 173 qualified players, he's 172. Ke'Bryan Hayes does not have a single barrel over the last 30 days of baseball. He's hitting .258 with 0 home runs. 3 stolen bases, though, which is nice. But Ke'Bryan Hayes feels like one, Ben, that in 12s, the problem is third base is so difficult. that's where it really gets tough. But Hayes feels like it could be a drop in 12s, 15. I know I haven't benched in some 15s. What are your thoughts on Brian Hayes right now? It's been another disappointing season. Plus, he's had the back issues off and on.
Agreed, yeah. Hayes is definitely a drop in 12s, I think, for me. If you can afford to have – or even another third baseman you can play that actually plays most of the time. And 15s, I haven't had to make that decision, but it's really comes down to who else is available. But when you look at his monthly splits, Hayes has really been bad every month. And so there's not really much that gives me hope for him going forward. He seems like he hasn't really lost playing time, which is a positive, but not if he's in your lineup because he's not really producing. I will say, though, in 16 July games, Hayes is hitting 290, which is part of what was appealing with where he was being drafted. But the speed, though, is just not there. And that's really what people who took Hayes – where they did, I think he crept near pick 100 in the main event, which I was never in on. I thought that was way too high. That was just too much projecting for a pick that early. But like the sprint speed is 26th percentile, which is really weird. I don't know if he had a lower body injury. Like I said, I haven't been following him too close because I don't have him anywhere. But yeah, not a good year for Hayes, and he'll probably go outside the top 200, 250 next year if I had a guess. And even the XBA is only 254, which is kind of middle of the road with the league. So there's not really much for optimism with Hayes. I would probably drop in 12s, like I said, and if you can, 15s.
Would you rather have Eugenio Suarez on his hot streak than Brian Hayes?
Oh, man. If they were both available, I'd probably prioritize Suarez just because he does have some pop and he probably will be a good source of RBIs and runs. But if you need average, I don't know. If you're fine in power, maybe go Hayes. But overall, I'd probably pick Suarez.
Yep, it's tricky. That's where we're at in third base these days. Is bright side is Royce Lewis is starting a rehab assignment on Tuesday. So you got that going for you. He should be back pretty soon. Let's talk about another one here, 167 on the list, with one barrel over the last 30 days, Eloy Jimenez. Talk about disappointments. Besides the injuries, dude's hitting 250 without a home run over the past 30 days. This is another one. Util only does not help his cause for fantasy. He feels like similar to Hayes, he's a drop in 12s, probably a drop in 15s. What's your thoughts on Eloy Jimenez? As it's been bleak, and just one last thing, dude's got a near 74% ground ball rate over the last 30 days. 74% ground ball rate. That is not going to help get the ball over the fence.
Not at all. And I'll try to keep it short and sweet. So definitely a drop in 12s. And there were I think maybe two main events where he was available and I did not put bids in for Eloy. I drafted him in one of my main events and just I thought he could maybe be a good upside play to bounce back and provide top 100 value where he was always getting drafted. But yeah, I'm seeing nothing where I'm optimistic with him for the rest of the season. He's not even hitting it for a good average, which was part of the appeal with drafting Eloy where he was going. He's so slow that he's not going to score runs. And I just can't believe how high that ground ball rate was that you just said. Yeah. But one of the metrics that kind of supports that on Savant is his launch angle sweet spot, which I believe is the percentage of your balls hit with the optimal launch angle for probably for a barrel. He's the first percentile. So
that's so bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's but like he has a 90 percentile hard hit. So he's just destroying worms right now.
If Billy Hamilton liked to have a conversation with him, that's pretty impressive stuff right there.
He's got the ability to run for him when he's at the plate. Yeah,
that's the thing, is he needs the speed to run, like the old rule on the playground, like let me hit it and you run type thing.
That's like you have a pulled muscle or something.
yeah, which Eloy might have still, so you never know. Let's talk Anthony Volpe, because this is the guy that kept rising during draft season, started out the year like, hey, this is the dude, here he is. Over the past 30 days, two total barrels for Anthony Volpe, has zero home runs. He does have seven doubles. That's a promising thing, I guess, but only two steals as well. He's hitting 175, Ben. He's moved from leadoff down to seventh now in the order. You obviously follow the Yankees closer than I do. So what are we thinking here on Volpe? Because we've seen a lot more middle infielders, especially shortstops, become available as the season goes on, like Max Schumann of Oakland's been good. You got Xavier Edwards, who we'll talk about in Miami. Is Volpe as much as a hold as he once was, or should we be giving up on Volpe?
In 12s, he's definitely not a hold. I think if you're able to get better production, current production, especially at this point of the year, I'd be fine moving on from Volpe. And a 12, I mean, a 15, it's hard because of the plate appearances. Even if he is down in the order, he never really sits. He's the Yankee shortstop, and no one, besides like the occasional day off just to give him rest, he's always going to be in the lineup. And with Volpe, it's just the speed, like the steals aren't there. So he has, 17 on the season, which is good. But I mean, you kind of wanted a lot more for Volpe considering how fast he is. He only has 4 in May, 4 in June, and only 2 so far in July. And part of the problem is not being on base. So, I mean, if you're not on base, you can't steal. But the Savant metrics are really bad. They're more power related, as most people know, but he had 21 homers last year, Volpe, and now he only has 7. So he's pacing to be well below that total. And the sprint speed's still there. Like, he's still fast, 85th percentile. But like I said, it's the opportunities aren't as plentiful as they probably were last year. And it does hurt me as a Yankee fan. I never understood his ADP because I had Volpe ranked closer to like Trevor Story and Willy Adames, maybe even behind those guys. And he was going to the pick 100, which I think people were just projecting the prospect growth. And he's only 23, and the Yankees are going to give him every chance to play. But until he shows some more sustainable improvements, I won't buy in the ADP if it's anywhere close to what it was this year again. But I'm sure he'll probably fall in drafts next year. But I doubt it'll be enough for me to be back in. And like I said, for the sake of the Yankees, I hope he turns it around. But because they really need help right now, I hear people say that for any pitcher they're a tough matchup, but they're really not. It's just Judge. It's the Judge and Soto show, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Yep, I'm with you there. I'm going to skip over Bregman. I just thought it was funny. Dude's got 2 barrels and 3 home runs. That's what Bregman does. So I want to throw that one out there just to keep people entertained on that one. But let's skip to Gleyber Torres here. 2 barrels over the past 30 days. He has have 1 home run in those 2 barrels, hitting .261. It's been a rough season. There's rumors he could be traded even as the Yankees are contending, but he could be a movable part. What are our thoughts on Torres? Because he's another guy that not everybody's willing to drop just yet, but if you look at the overall production, not very worthy these times.
I wish you'd stop picking on the Yankees, Bob, but it's not very nice.
I don't make the list. Well, I make this. I make this list. I don't make the barrel list.
No. Yeah, you didn't make those numbers up, so I can't blame you for that. So to tell you how things are going, I have I think it's a Fab League where I have Gleyber and Tyro. I held on to Tyro. Tyro has 4 games start the week, and I think it was 104. I had Tyro in my lineup, and he's been awful since he came back from his injury. That's why I was going to sit him despite the 4 games Monday through Thursday. And I ended up putting Gleyber back in last minute, but I was considering playing a Tyro who went like 1-for-22 last week over Gleyber. So that kind of tells you where it's at. And kind of like Volpe, all the expected stats for the power numbers are really down for Torres. The average is a killer because, and I think it's my OLAC team, and I've been playing Torres all year. So, I mean, which has been to my detriment for sure, because like nothing that he's done has really helped that team. But yeah, it's rough. I remember from watching Gleyber for all these years, he has a swing that doesn't look like it's powerful. So everyone knows that the 38 he hit in 2019 was unsustainable. So like 24-25 is what everyone was kind of hoping for, was a handful of steals, more than 10. But I don't know, his swing doesn't look like a good swing. He has a high leg kick and the hands are high, and I feel like a lot can go wrong. And I don't know if that's what the issue is. His bat speed's only 22nd percentile, so maybe it swings too loopy, which I guess if you have a happy fun ball and you just barrel it up, it's going to go out more with the slow bat speed. And now that the ball's doesn't travel as far, if you're not swinging as hard, you're not going to hit it as far. So I think that narrative kind of makes sense in my mind. And definitely I have no problem dropping Torres in a 12, and I'm not going to cut him in that 15 yet. I mean, at this point, I probably should have if I was going to, but I don't know if he gets, I don't think he's going to trade him because they're probably going to make the playoffs despite struggling over the last month themselves. And, I don't know. I think he's on a contract year. So much for that contract year boost that people always hope for. But yeah, he's definitely a part of the Yankees' woes. Him and Volpe were supposed to be like their first and fifth hitter, and it's not really surprising why they're struggling lately when both have been so terrible lately.
Yeah, I was very high on Torres and Estrada this year, so I could feel those pains with you when you said that. And don't know if I had them on the same team together, but I probably do. If I really want to go torture myself here in a little bit, I might find that out. But that's why it rang real close to home when you mentioned those two names together. That was a tough go. Well, this guy's technically not a Yankee anymore, but he was a Yankee and didn't produce with the Yankees, and now he's finding life in Oakland of all places. I want to bring up Miguel Andujar because this could be a potential sell guy if we want to talk about it in a trade format. In a redraft, you're probably just hanging on to Andujar because he's been hitting second daily for the Oakland Athletics over the last 30 days, though. Two barrels for Miguel Andujar over the last 30 days with two home runs over with those two, probably not even both barrels, but he has two home runs, two barrels. But he's hitting 278, Ben, with 12 runs and 10 RBIs. He's kind of found a new lease on life in Oakland. And he's only, like I say only, he's 29 years old. Feels like he's been around forever because we've been talking Miguel Andujar for a long, long time. What are your thoughts on what we could get from Miguel the rest of the way? Because it seems like he's, you know, producing at his extreme potentially, but who knows? Maybe he's found his stride in Oakland.
Yeah. So he never really was a big power prospect, even though he had that near rookie of the year, I think in 2018, when he debuted. But the one thing that Andujar is providing is the average. So every month he's hit at least 288. In May he was 375, but he only had 24 at-bats. But in June, 288, and July, 302 so far. So, I mean, that's as valuable there, but more so in a deeper league, because in a 12, you kind of want a little more power, more well-rounded players from your positions, I think. And on the year, going back to Savant with Andujar, his XBA is really the only positive slider that he has, and then his K rate, which those kind of go hand in hand. So nothing surprising there. He's not going to run. He's very slow, 26 percentile sprint speed. But yeah, just don't expect the power from Andujar. I'm not really surprised that he struggled lately. His barrel rate on the year is 3.7%. And historically, I don't think it's ever been very high. Like last year, 7%, but that was like 324 pitches. So I'm not sure how many at-bats that is. That's a pretty low total. And even like 2020, it was 3.8%, 2021, 5.5, 2022, 3.7. I think from remembering, I think his ground ball rate's always been an issue. So
yes, it has. Yep.
Not really surprising that the power isn't really there. He kind of is like a Vlad profile, but doesn't hit it nearly as hard. So, I mean, if you need the playing time, sure, keep Andujar in your lineups, but don't expect the power.
Yeah. And is that the one position we haven't talked a ton about on this drop side of things is outfield? There are a lot of outfielders to decipher through. So it's not one of the go-tos, because the last guy we're going to mention here, and this can be as simple as you keep or cut if you want, or you could dig in. It's another third baseman, unfortunately, and it's another St. Louis Cardinal, unfortunately. See, I'm not just picking on your Yankees, Ben. We got the Cardinals in play here, and that's Nolan Arenado, who over the last 30 days, two barrels so far with a 26% hard hit rate, which is dreadful, of course. He's hitting 287 over the last 30 days, but two barrels. Arenado has three home runs. We know that's not how this usually works, folks, so keep that in mind. And a near 50% ground ball rate to go on top of it. So what are your thoughts on Arenado?
They're not very good. I don't know. I think he's kind of in the Goldschmidt territory. He's not as old as Goldschmidt, but I don't know. Arenado, you mentioned Bregman earlier. He's kind of had the same gimmick as Bregman has, where he has to be pull heavy. And Arenado's exit velocity has never been that high, but this year it's 85%, which is well below his normal year averages, which are closer to 89 or 90, which is about average, but now he's in the blue. That's how Savant classifies it. And I guess in a 12, if you need power, drop him. But I think the numbers are decent enough where in a 15, you probably have to hold, especially because he's a third baseman. But I'm not too optimistic for a big bounce back in the second half or last third.
Yeah, moral of the story, folks, 15s are tough. As we've mentioned many times, you kind of just have to struggle with some of these guys. 12s, you can drop most of these guys. That's just the reality of it. At that point of the year, shake and bake, do what you got to do, and ride the hot hands, see where it goes from there. All right, Ben, let's head over to the NFBCOC Week 18 Fab and do a little bit of recapping here. We got some fun names get added. And a player we talked briefly about last week, so we don't have to go crazy on him, is the most added player in OCs in 114 leagues, as high as $43, as low as a dollar, was Juan Yepez, who continues to be an amazing batting average asset so far to start his run with the Nationals. It got Joey Meneses sent back to AAA. We saw a little power, one home run over all this, But what's your any other thoughts on Juan Yepez, who has been quite productive since coming up to the Nats?
He's probably the first base version of Miguel Andujar because of the high average, low power, and a lot of plate appearances. So last week in the he had 333, hit a homer, which was nice during the All-Star break week, and the week before that he was 10 for 25. So definitely helping you with average if you were added him before week 16, which is where he hit 400. But yeah, it seems like the playing time will be there in Washington because he's young enough. He's 26. So if you need a corner and some batting average help and probably some moderate run and RBI production, I think he's a pretty good add. The steals, I don't think he's very fast. He does have one, though, so far in just under 50 at-bats, but probably more like an average and a run and RBI play if you need that help.
Yep, I'm with you there. He's no Rowdy Tellez, but not a bad first base option if you need one. It's basically like if you're a Nolan Schanuel believer, I'd rather take a shot on Juan Yepez is the way I can compare the two, because Schanuel was kind of an average guy too, limited power. I think Yepez is better. And similar, like you made the Miguel Andujar comparison, another former highly touted prospect that really didn't have it, get it going. Maybe a new lease on life, finding a new place to play, and age as well, development. Things can change for you. Second most added player in 100 leagues, as high as $99, as low as a buck. And I have a feeling in OCs he's going to get added a lot more next week because some might have been busy on Sunday to see the real implosion from Evan Phillips, who has been struggling a ton of late. This is Daniel Hudson, who was picked up in those leagues. He's got saves in three straight outings. He has six saves on the year now with a 1.56 ERA. Six wins as well, obviously because he wasn't the primary closer at the time. But Hudson was a popular pickup this week. I still get worried because Phillips technically isn't hurt, and they haven't said he's out of the role yet. But it feels like things are transitioning to a little more Hudson action in LA. So what were your thoughts on Daniel Hudson being a fab target this week in a world where we haven't had a lot of saves available on the market?
Right. So I was away, so I had limited time to work with Fab. I don't know if Hudson was available in the 15s. He's probably someone who was already rostered just because of the way 15s work. But so looking at
Let me tell you real quick. In main events, Hudson was added in 45 leagues, as high as 71, as low as $5. And I'm guessing, like you said, he was probably only available in 45 leagues.
Yeah, so there's 57 main events this year, so he was already held on to in 12. So actually more – so that's a pretty good amount that he's available in. Probably that's pretty 80%.
Yeah, good chunk.
Yeah. And so with the situation, so Hudson has the last two saves for the Dodgers, and he's still listed as the setup guy on Roster Resource. But when you look at Closer Monkey, aka Reliever Recon, they have Hudson as the closer now, and it's more of a committee, and Hudson's the lead guy according to the hierarchy. So this is interesting for if you have I'm losing my train of thought here. His name is Evan Phillips. So if you have Evan Phillips, you probably wanted to get Daniel Hudson and Fab if he was available. And it's never a sure thing, especially with closers. And there hasn't been many available. But I think I've been hearing or reading that Phillips has a bad split issue or problem right now. And as a closer, that could definitely cause you to not get every save chance. So let me go to – I know we're talking about Hudson, but Phillips is really the reason why Hudson's relevant.
Yep, exactly.
And so let me go to the left, right, where I'm looking. They don't have it versus for pitchers. But I think there's a split issue with Phillips. So if he can't figure that out, then Hudson probably will be the guy going forward. I think he was only added, like you said, in 100 OCs. So he's probably out there in a handful more. And like you said, he'll probably be added even more depending on what happens this week, next weekend. You just have to monitor, see what the Dodgers do. Because if Hudson does get a decent share of the save chances going forward, or even or not even the majority, but just like maybe half, he's going to have value. And I think those prices were kind of reasonable, but maybe if there was more Fab available, he probably would have gone for higher, I think, based on how he got the last two. I think the prices were low just because of where we are in the season.
I agree. I think that's the biggest part. Prices were low because the season, if this was, let's say, May, that probably would have been a couple hundred bucks easy. Easy. As you're kind of hinting at there. So we'll see where it goes. Pretty much probably fully rostered in main events. Now we'll see how many more places he gets added in 12s this weekend, because that'll be fixed, especially if it gets one or two more saves this week. Watch out, everybody. Luis L. Ortiz of the Pirates. We talked about him briefly last week as well. He made another start this week. 7 shutout innings with 2 more strikeouts against Philadelphia, of all teams. Dude's made 4 starts now, allowed 1 earned run or less in every start. He's got, let's see here, do the quick math, 19 strikeouts in 24 and two-thirds innings. Another guy that used to be a touted prospect, didn't make it work, but the pitch mix change has been pretty evident and discussed quite a bit. I liked Ortiz. I picked him up in a few leagues. We'll talk about that. I'd like to see more consistency in the strikeout department, but I don't see why he can't get the ball every fifth day in Pittsburgh and become at least a streamable, like a bench streamer is the way I'll put it. But 7 shutout against Philadelphia, that people have to take notice of that.
For sure. Yeah, I was going to go with the strikeout, down the strikeout road like you were talking about. So on the year, 7.21 K per 9, and that as a percentage is 19.7%, which that's fairly low. And Ortiz's swing strike rate on the year is 9.9%, which isn't very good. So, yeah, I agree with you saying that he needs to get this K rate up a little bit more to be a little more effective. I actually played Ortiz against the Phillies in the DC where I have, because I have like no options in that DC, and I got very fortunate that he didn't get blown up. I think when we mentioned him last week, Ortiz, his issue has been his role, but RotoWire has him currently in against the Diamondbacks on Friday against the Diamondbacks on Friday, so that's good. And I think as long as he stays in the rotation, definitely run him out there. I agree with your take that he's a bench streamer, especially in a 12 and a 15. Maybe you don't have as many good options, but I would still try to pick and choose where I start him.
Yeah, I'd pick and choose, but there's going to be, I think, plenty of options. And the Pirates are scoring runs at least enough. Like, they're winning games. They're above 500 right now. So he'll have his chances, especially if he's going 6 or 7 innings. Bednar looks back and healthy. So there are interesting situations there for Pittsburgh these days.
One thing just to add to Ortiz, which I forgot to mention when I was talking earlier, is his homer to fly ball rate is only 3.5% on the year. So there could be some home run regression in the negative sense for Ortiz going forward.
Yep, I think that's a great call as well. Speaking of the things that surprise me when it comes to ad drops these time of year, is Victor Robles was the fourth most added player, 83 leagues, as high as $37, as low as a buck. Obviously, earlier this year, the Nats let him go. Seattle picked him up. In July, he's been playing rather like regularly since July 5th, especially since like the 11th. He's played almost every day. So, Victor Robles hitting .455 in July with 1 homer, 6 stolen bases. If we had qualified people in this, Victor Robles actually checks out. It won't even come up here because it's not qualified. That's great. Oh, there it is. In the month of July, 17.6% barrel rate, 53% hard hit rate for Victor Robles. Now, I'll admit it, I got a blind spot to Victor Robles because of many years of just getting slapped across the face by Victor Robles. So it's Robles. I apologize to those that are pronunciation people. But what's your thoughts on Victor going forward? Because he was very popular, batting 2nd on Monday night, so he's hitting towards the top of the order as well.
I agree with your take. I'm very skeptical of Robles because I have drafted him usually in DCs in the past. I did draft him once this year, but he was going so late. So I actually have him in my lineup now, which is kind of weird. But, I mean, it's that time of the year where DC's, your options are thin. But so we're talking about his barrel rate over the last, that same time period. On the year, it's 15.4%. But, I mean, his season doesn't really extend farther out past that window we were looking at. But, it's kind of weird that he's hitting the ball so well. The hard hit, though, is only 34.6% of the time. So, it's like when he's hitting it hard, he's hitting at that optimal launch angle, which isn't really sustainable, I don't think, to time it up that perfectly when you do hit it that hard. And his average exit velocity is only 88.3 miles per hour, which is below average. But the XBA is there, and I think Robles is more of a speed play and maybe average because he has 71st percentile sprint speed still. And you mentioned the batting 2nd in the Mariners lineup. That's very valuable, especially even in the 12, but 15s, it's super valuable. And I think, I forget who we were talking about earlier, but you mentioned that I think it was Randy Rosarain. If the Mariners do make a trade, then I don't know if Robles will still play like he has been now, because they do have Luke Raley and they have Mitch Garver at DH. But I guess Raley could move the first base now that France has been DFA'd. And
But they want to play. They said they want Locklear to get every day at bats. So
okay, so Raley's probably the. It's gonna be Raley versus Robles if they make a trade.
They could platoon in reality.
Yeah, then Robles loses still. So
yep.
Yeah, so I guess Robles is one of the guys where you kind of ride it while he's hot and just take whatever you can get. But I would not be married to Robles if you did add him. Just be ready to drop if he does start slumping again.
I'm with you. Yelber Diaz of the Arizona Diamondbacks has a two-step this week, starting on Monday night against the Kansas City Royals. Diaz, 82 leagues, picked him up as high as 36, as low as a buck. He's made two starts, six innings, one run in both, but seven total strikeouts. Did have a good amount of Ks in the minors this year, which is promising. But again, that's a lot different than where we're at now. I like Diaz, but they also have Jordan Montgomery coming back here maybe this week, if not next week. And then Merrill Kelly is not too far off as well, it sounds like. So Diaz's time in the rotation, I'm not sure how long he's there for, so I'm trying to say.
Right. And I remember we talked about Diaz last week. I forget why. I don't know if he was in the ads then, but he didn't even make an ad yet over the three-day period. So people were the reason why is because, and I mentioned this, and I also wrote about him in my article on Sports Ethos, was who Diaz faces. And you kind of alluded to the point I made as well. It was about the Diamondbacks getting healthy again. But Diaz gets the Royals tonight, and then he gets the Pirates on Sunday. So that, which I think,
not bad.
Yeah, I wish I would have remembered that. I don't know if he was available in my main events, but I would have definitely started Diaz for those matchups if I thought to add him or if I could add him, because I was in on him if I had the space. I remember I put a bid in for him last weekend's Fab, but I don't think I got him. And I think he had another good matchup next week if he does second the rotation. And the Sunday start is even with Montgomery coming back. That's how they projected on RotoWire. But next week, just so I can say for sure, he'd get the Pirates again.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, you don't always know how back-to-back starts versus the same opponent will go, but when it's the Pirates, I would take that risk.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on that one. So I see the appeal. I'm with you there, so we'll kind of see how that plays out. Let's talk his teammate, Ryan Nelson, who was picked up in 59 leagues, as high as $31, as low as a buck. Nelson's coming off of 5 2/3, one run, 9 Ks against the Cubs. And even deeper, in the month of July, Nelson's made three starts, four appearances. He came as a piggyback in one of those. 22 Ks and 24 and a third innings, a 2.22 ERA. So he's looked a lot better in the month of July. He gets, you mentioned the Royals this week and the Washington Nationals next week. So if you're looking for a streamer, Nelson could be a dude as well.
For sure. And the one thing that's kind of held Nelson back in his brief career is the K rate. But I think he made it. So he had 22 in July so far, 22 and 24 in a third July innings. So that's awesome. And the walk rate's been really good. So that's really helped out Nelson this year. I think that's why people keep adding him, especially in the main event. He only has 22 walks on 92 innings, 92 and a third innings pitch on the season, which is very good. And that includes four or five in all of June. And then so far, just four in July. So if he can get the strikeout rate up, I think he could be really good and kind of hit on that prospect pedigree. He'll probably stick over Diaz, but I guess Nelson could be someone who gets kicked as well if Rodriguez and Kelly come back, because they have Jomo, Gallen, Fott, and then Nelson and Diaz. So it could get tight for – I don't know if they go six-man rotation, but Nelson could lose his job eventually, I think.
Yeah, I'll believe it when Erod comes back. That's all. I know. I'm losing hope on that one ever happening this year. It's every time one step forward, two step back type thing. It feels like with Erod, it's been a wild season in that regard. David Peterson, he had a two step this week going up against here it is, the Marlins on Monday and the Braves on Sunday. Peterson was added in 52 leagues, as high as $57, as low as a buck. He's always been someone on my radar. It's always been a walk thing with him more than anything, because he's made eight starts, two home runs or less than seven of those starts, but 19 walks and 32 Ks over 43 and two-thirds innings. So it's just a matter of, can he go long enough without walking the planet to make it work? What was your interest for David Peterson?
I think he was probably held in all of the main events just because, sure. Yeah, he's not available right now. And I think just because of the strikeout upside that you and others are always intrigued by is why he stayed on teams, and he definitely would have been added for the two-start week for sure. But yeah, you mentioned the walk rate. That's always, as I said before with Peterson, we talked about him many times already, I think, this year. Just what one thing that keeps me from being so interested in adding him. And but you may see that the Braves are on the two-start schedule for him this week, but that like they lost Albies. They're just so hurt right now and not really the Braves that we were used to last year, 2 years. I'm fine with starting him in this two-start week, especially with the Marlins right now. And we're already half hour into that game, so maybe he's doing well, maybe he's getting crushed, but I would have considered playing him for this week.
Yep, I would have played him as well. Speaking of the Marlins, Xavier Edwards added in 50 leagues, as high as 37, as low as a dollar. I think that number is going to keep coming up here in weeks as people see what this kid can do. 24-year-old prospect, the Marlins DFA'd Tim Anderson to basically give Edwards a chance to run with the last few months of the season. And since he came back up on July 2nd, Edwards is hitting 364. No homers, but three stolen bases. So super productive in that regard. Again, we kind of talked about it earlier with like Volpe and some other guys. Edwards does interest me in a world. If you don't need power, because I don't think he's going to give you a ton, but average speed and maybe some runs is definitely on the table with a guy like Xavier Edwards.
For sure. He's someone I have in a DC. And when he got shortstop eligibility, I was so happy because I actually drafted him and Tim Anderson on the same DC. And funny enough, I also had John Birdie. So I basically had all of the Marlins shortstops. That was before Anderson signed, but it's kind of funny how it worked out that way. And I do have Edwards in one of my main events, and I've been very happy with how he's performed so far. He hasn't really played much of the majors, so I pulled up his minor league page. He's a big speed and average guy, so he hit 30 steals a couple reached 30 steals a couple times, once in 2023 and once in 2019. His career minor league average is 313, so he backs up your take on the high average. And I think I heard today when I was listening to podcasts, catching up, that and that makes sense. So if the Marlins do trade Jazz, then Edwards could very well slide up to the leadoff spot and no longer be at the bottom of the Marlins, or as bad as it is. But I mean, if you're playing, if you're batting leadoff anywhere, you're going to have value even at 12 teamer, I think, especially with the speed and the average that Edwards does bring in, potentially that boost in runs as well. So I'm a big Edwards fan. I hope he continues to play well, because I have a couple teams doing really well and he's on them. So I want him to keep doing well.
I'm with you. He was a target of mine this past week. We'll talk about him. Max Schumann was a target of mine. He's not very widely added this week. Not many were. We hit all the players 50 or more leagues. That's where we are at this point of the season, folks. Either widely rostered or people are kind of moving on to football. So that's something you got to think about. Junior Caminero was a popular one. He's back from the minor league IL. He should be. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him come up pretty soon. Ben Joyce has been a spec guy we've talked about a lot. Really nothing too out of the ordinary that stands out here. So if you're ready, Ben, let's talk about our moves from the week.
Yep, it'll be quick for me because, as I mentioned, I was on vacation and I tried to make ads when I could. Yeah, so and also with the 3-game week, I kind of it was you need more data for really you want to make more moves anyway. I think you don't want to go too crazy. So my OLAC, I'll start with. I only made one move. I added Carson Fulmer. I dropped James Outman, $4, no backup. Fulmer was kind of projected for a two-start week. We end up starting Sunday, though, but he gets the A's on this following upcoming weekend. So I figured to take a shot there if I needed a starter. He's been all right since he's been back in the majors, surprisingly. Then I'll go to main three. So I was going to ask. So I saw this guy on the Fab list before we cut it off. So I figured I knew we were going to talk about him, and that's Hayden Birdsong. So I added him. I dropped Justin Martinez, $34, backup of 16. I overshot the market a little bit on Birdsong. I think maybe because people are unsure if he's going to stick in the rotation, but I saw the 12 strikeouts. He gets the Rockies this week at home, and I figured, well, if I could, this team needs strikeout help, and why not? So I don't know. That's my only add in this main, so I don't know if you have anything to help me feel better or feel worse.
No, his start, 6 innings, 2 runs, 12 Ks against the Rockies on Sunday in Coors, 27 whiffs, tied Cease for the most in a game this season, 45% CSW. The talent is there. I think this is his peak talent in that game. But talent's very much there with Birdsong. The rotation is the question with Ray coming back any day, Cobb coming back soon. But at the same time, like I've been saying, is Hicks is wearing down. Keaton Wynn isn't the same guy. Like, there's a lot of questions there. And for the Giants, a team that should be selling, in my mind, they need to see what Birdsong has in the second half to see if he's a actual stable piece in this rotation going forward. So I like the move. It was one of those where I was interested in Hayden Birdsong, but I wasn't breaking the bank for Hayden Birdsong, because every time I think I know what the Giants are going to do, they do the wrong thing just to make me annoyed. So that's where I am. Like, in reality, he should be in your like on your roster for the rest of the season. But would you be? I wouldn't be shocked if all of a sudden here comes Alex Cobb and, hey, Hayden, go back to AAA. That's the bad part of this whole thing.
Yeah. And I remember I looked at their rotation today, the Giants, and I noticed Hicks there, and I could see him, like you mentioned, get moved to the bullpen.
He's already said he's feeling the wear and tear of the innings. He's flat out said that already. Like, I dropped in the last 2 weeks, dropped in almost every team I have.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's gives me hope for Birdsong sticking around. And I think they should move Hicks to the bullpen if that's the case, because they did invest a few years into him, and I doubt they want to blow his arm out. So
completely agree.
All right. So main two, I think this is another one with one ad. Yep. So I went cheap again here. I added Andrew McCutchen. I dropped Joey Loperfido, $2, no backup. And then on main one, I think I made one ad here as well. So one ad. So this is a stash play. It's kind of funny. So I added Evan Carter. He projects to be back relatively soon if his back holds up. I dropped Ozzie Albies, sadly, $8, no backup. So one ad per team this week in my 15s.
The Carter stash could be a good one. I like that as well. In my 15s, my Olak, I added Heston Kjerstad, dropped James Outman, 12-8. Added Joshua Palacios because the Pirates facing a bunch of righties just to watch him sitting on Monday. That was fun. Dropped Luis Matos, who's in a platoon, 9-0. No one wanted Palacios, apparently. Missed that memo. Maybe he got hurt again, and I just missed that, just like MJ Melendez last week. AJ Puck, added him for $6, dropped Jesus Luzardo's runner-up bid of 5 on that one. So speculating on Puck where I can. Love in the Bloom, auction 1, got Palacios, dropped Outman 15-1. Again, no one wanting Palacios, which is fun. Auction 2, I don't think I've got anybody. I got outbid on everybody I wanted in that league. Main event qualifier, Joshua Palacios dropped Michael Mercado 12-3. Added Ryan Nelson, dropped Davis Daniels 12-12 unicorn bid. Like you said, Ben, if I win the bid, is it really a winning bid? Because that means your team sucks. But I'll take it in that regard.
Maybe you're in second, he's in first. Who knows?
I love the optimism, but no, that is not the case on that. All right. Do you have any Yahoo to talk about, or do you want me to go to my 12s?
I do, but I pulled up Palacios because I have him on my most important main event right now. So I'm heavily invested in what's going on. So they're facing Andre Pallante, who's on the Cardinals, and the note says that he holds reverse splits. So
so the Pirates are a heavy analytic team now. That is good to hear.
Apparently. Go figure.
Interesting. Go figure. All the teams didn't pick that one to be the case.
Yeah, which the results showed that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so because it was a short week, and also because Yahoo combines last week with this week, and I have limited ads to make, I only made one move since last Monday, and I added Jonah Heim. I needed a catcher because I had MJ Melendez on this team, and he actually homered on Sunday, so that was nice, but that was my only move I made since Monday.
Gotcha. All right, in my OCs, where it's always fun in these streets, I got Juan Yepes, dropped Nolan Chanuel, 7-2. Then I added Matt Wallner, who's also sitting versus a righty on Monday. Dropped James Outman, 3-0. Added Joshua Palacios, dropped Ozzie Albies, 2-0. Added Travis d'Arnaud, dropped Kyle Higashioka, 2-0. That was a tough one because Higgy's been good, but I think d'Arnaud's got the higher ceiling. We'll see how much I regret that. In OC2, added Juan Yepes, dropped Nolan Chanuel, 7-1. Added Eugenio Suarez, dropped James Outman, 4-0. Added Matt Wallner, dropped Ozzie Albies, 3-2. As you can see, Outman and Albies are leaving all of my rosters because Outman's in AAA and Albies is pretty much done. And then in OC3, the only team I don't think I had him on yet, I got Jesus Sanchez, dropped Nolan Chanuel, 4-0. Added Wensiel Perez, dropped James Outman, 3-0. Added Austin Wells, dropped Higashioka, 1-0. And Wells went deep in his first at bat on Monday. So that was pretty, pretty fun as well. All right, Ben, let's do a couple listener questions, and then we'll head on out of here. I got your one that you messaged me with, so we're good there.
Okay, good.
But we'll start with Stephen Crawford, who's also been watching live here with us. But he said, if J-Rod misses any time, would you run with Lawrence Butler or Chirillo to fill in. Jackson Chirillo's been swinging it really well. So it's been Butler, though. So I'd go Butler personally. But what about you?
So I'm assuming that Steven means for the week.
Yeah.
Based on the question, the way he posed it. So I would go Butler because he should get righties. At least six out of seven righties. And yeah. I think he even started versus a lefty that 1 week. I'm not really aware of how Chirillo is doing, but I know
he's been over the last month. Dude's hitting like 321. He's getting much better.
Oh, that's good for. Yeah. Is he platooning at all? Or is he kind of in there every day?
He still is a little bit. So I'd go Butler.
And Butler's definitely going to hit first too. So maybe more plate appearances for that reason.
That's the other thing. He'll lead off where Chirillo's still kind of buried in the batting order. He's like at best fifth, usually sixth or seventh. BP at futures_bet says, guys, I'm in a saves hold league. I have Lucas Irseg, Jason Foley, and Fernando Cruz. Their high whips are hurting me, I should say. They haunt me. Drop any of them for Jose Buto or Ryan Thompson from Arizona.
Definitely the last guy you mentioned in that tweet. I should have pulled it up. Buto is a very good ad if you want pitchers like that, because he could also get moved into the rotation. I even added Buto in a 15 not that long ago, but I think who was the other? I have it right here. Fernando Cruz. Yeah, I don't know if he's gonna get saved chances eventually. Ryan Thompson. I think he kind of got pushed behind Gingle lately with how Gingle's been pitching. Unless they shut down Mason Miller, I don't think. But it is saves and holds. It's a fun group of guys. I think Buto and Thompson should get saves. So maybe switch out the two you like the least for those two. I would say.
Yeah, Buto. I go Buto 1, Thompson 2 between those two. Cruz would be my first drop on that list, and then maybe Irseg. I like Irseg quite a bit, but Foley actually gets a lot of the back end innings, so
he's always going to be in high leverage. I think whether he's setting up or getting a save, so maybe drop Cruz and Irseg and keep Foley.
Yep, that's kind of where I'd be leaning as well. Timothy says, and he's a avid listener, is in the Bubba and the Bloom listener leagues, and he's in one of my OCs, so this is fun. When a pitcher comes back from a long layoff, do you normally bench him for the first start? This week, that pitcher is likely Kodai Senga versus the Braves. I'll let you have the floor first, Ben.
Yeah, so I try to avoid starting these pitchers if I can. The one exception I made this year, I remember was Nick Lodolo because he didn't have an arm injury. So I was a little more optimistic with starting him right away. But with what Senga has gone through this year, the injury he had in the layoff, I would definitely wait and see if I could.
Yeah, I'm with you. Senga, I started him in two DCs because I need pitching in those DCs. So that's kind of a different question. But if it's a fab league, I'm with you. I try to hold and just see. Like, it sucks because the Braves aren't the Braves right now. That's where it's so tempting. And Senga's looked really good in his rehab. And he actually built the pitch count up. But I'd still like, it's different. The adrenaline, you got to imagine getting back on the MLB mound and everything. I'd sit this one out if you can, Timothy, especially if it's your OC team. Just going to throw it out there. But if not, I understand starting a guy of his caliber, but I'm with Ben. I try not to if I can avoid it.
I wish I didn't miss this because I do have Senga in my DC that has been starting like four starters for the last 3 months because everyone else is hurt. And he's one of the reasons why. But so I would have had to make that decision, go with someone like I've been starting Pedro Avila. That's how bad it is.
Oh man. Yeah.
No. But I mean, he got a week, I mean, a win 1 week for me, and he does all right. He's been doing all right. But if I knew Senga was back, I probably would have sat him, I think, on the spot right now for a reliever just to play it safe, I think.
Yeah, those the DCs is a different beast, as many know, when it comes to start sit decisions. And then we do have a question in the chat here from Charles G. Lynch. Kierstead platooning, ? Thanks. Yeah, for now, he's most of the time he's sitting versus lefties. He's sitting versus lefty on Monday night. He was on the IL for a while, concussion IL. So you got to keep that in mind as well. But it seems like he's pretty much in a platoon. With either Ced Mullins or Kowser has been getting plenty of time as well. It's kind of one of those two guys seems to take Kierstead's spot, it feels like, when Kierstead sits.
Right. But the one thing I did hear, I believe it was, I mentioned Scott and Jeff on the RotoWire pod, they were saying to I think it was Scott who said it. He's going to try to get all of these Orioles in case they get traded.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so if you can stash someone right now, I think Kerstad and also Kowser, if he's available, are definitely good stash options leading up to the deadline.
Yep, like I mentioned in my recap, I picked up Kerstad where he was available in one of my leagues. I put $12 out there and got him. Dropped James Outman. I'll take my chances on that as well. I'm with you 100% sure on that. So you just got to sit him for now. And it's a combination. Either Kerstad gets traded and plays more, or someone gets traded and now Kerstad gets to play. So it's a win-win in almost any way you look at it, and see where it goes from there. But all right, Ben, we're going to wrap it up there. Another fun episode in the books, talking barrels and Week 18 Fab and much more coming at people in the future here. But any final words? Remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
No, it was fun to jump right back into the fantasy mindset. Like I said, I was basically disconnected for 5 days, give or take. Limited access to the NFBC site and all that stuff. So it's good to jump back in. And I'm looking forward to the unofficial second half. But like you said earlier, it's more like the last third of the year. And yep, I'm at Sports Ethos. See my column come out this upcoming Sunday for deep league streamers, not only applicable to the NFBC, but probably NL only, AL only, those type of deeper formats where the waiver wires are pretty thin. So give it a read if you need help with those types of things.
Yep, check it out. Ben's got the goods. He's a very knowledgeable guy, obviously. Not just, fun to talk to. Knows his stuff as well. So thanks for listening, everybody. Even if you're playing NCAA football, like apparently some guy named Ryan Bloomfield's been doing. So you can do that as well. But check out Ben again on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm Matt Bediantric. We'll be back with you guys next week to recap the Week 19 Fab and much, much more. But for now, Bench with Bubba, episode 680. Catch you all later.